From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome, my friends. It is a little bit past 4 p.m. Central Standard Time on this Sunday, June 13th, 2010. I'm Alex Jones. We're going to be here with you for the next 2 hours. Coming up in the next segment, Congressman Ron Paul will join us on a host of key issues. Then Jeffrey Smith, who has authored two amazing books that we carry at Infowars.com, Seeds of Deceptions and one other, Genetic Roulette, that go over the incredible fact that every major study out there on GMO, even the company's own studies show that it is reducing fertility in every mammal species and attacking their organs. I mean, this is so important. So Ron Paul, Jeffrey Smith coming up in this hour. And then we're going to look at Bilderberg 2010 in retrospect. We've got Charlie Skelton of the London Guardian coming on to go over all of what happened at Bilderberg. Then Jim Tucker of American Free Press, the big granddaddy of exposing the Bilderberg Group, and Mark Anderson, who's also the deputy editor at that publication. So it's going to be all Bilderberg coming up in the second hour of this radio broadcast today. So I will assure you, this is information that everyone needs to hear. We are on the cusp of a massive awakening. All of the people we've seen waking up so far, and the what appears to be a just explosive awakening, is actually just the primary ignition, or the firing pin hitting the blasting cap in the 30-06 shell casing. We're about to see the true explosion as the powder inside the cartridge, this is my analogy, ignites and fires the projectile of liberty out of the barrel towards the enemy, which is spiritual, financial, and physical tyranny. So we're nonviolent, ladies and gentlemen, but make no mistake, we are warring in the information war against the forces of the New World Order and having a ultra massive effect. That's why the system is scared. A microcosm example of that is all over the country. Police are arresting people for videotaping them in public when there's no reasonable perception of privacy. And court after court is throwing it out, pointing out that this is fraud. But why would the police, in many cases, be so arrogant and out of control? Because they're scared. They're unconstitutional. Police tactics are backfiring on them and are really exposing what they're doing. And their attempt to shut down free speech with cameras is only going to backfire as well. And the same thing is going to happen with the mainstream media. Chris Matthews, Carlos Watson, the New York Times, Cass Sunstein, Elena Kagan, and all these thugs openly coming out and saying shut down free speech in America. Tax the internet, shut down alternative news, make alternative blogs carry government propaganda. That is only illustrating to everyone just how corrupt this system is and just how much trouble this corrupt mockery is in. So I want to encourage everyone to redouble your efforts to reach out and wake up everybody you know. As I keep saying over and over again, like a woodpecker or like a siren, an air raid siren repeating the same droning signal, but it's important. Now is the time. Yes, a lot of you reached out to people. You made copies of films. You had newsletters. You called into talk radio. You went to the city council. You went to the county commissioners. You went to the water board and said, get the fluoride out of my water. I'm going to carry that in the first 5 minutes of the next hour, by the way, in between interviews. So stay with us for that coming up in T-minus 1 hour. If you want to be technical, 57 minutes from now. The issue is now people are really ready to be awakened, and the globalists know that, so they're pulling out all the stops, moving against our society in mass. So it is so key, it is so essential to reach out to everyone you know, like your life and your financial future and your liberty depends on it, because it does. The denial is over. The admissions of the attack on free speech are now openly being stated. They're admitting world government. They're admitting that we're not going to have a good future, that the, quote, good times are over, head of the IMF and the head of the Central Bank of Europe bragging in the Washington Post. It is happening. Congressman Ron Paul is coming up on this Sunday edition. And then Jeffrey Smith, Charlie Skelton, Jim Tucker, Mark Anderson, and, of course, yours truly, Alex Jones. So stay with us on this Sunday, June 13th, 2010 transmission. The websites are Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv, Infowars.net, and DronesReport.com. We shall return. is going on. We've only got him for about 20 minutes or so. Congressman Ron Paul, I don't know how he does it. Legislation, lobbying on the floor, doing 10, 15 media events a day, writing books, running Campaign for Liberty, supporting Rand Paul with the incredible realignment we're seeing politically. But he does it, and God bless him. He's Congressman Ron Paul. I want to talk about Iran, North Korea, the economy, the border situation. I want to talk about so many issues with Ron Paul. But a congressman from Texas joining us today. Congressman, first off, the political realignment. Every incumbent, whether it's Specter, a Democrat, or whether it's a Republican for the first time in 20 years, winning in Hawaii for the Congress, to your son, Rand Paul, with a 30-point defeat of the establishment Republican. Have you ever seen a realignment like this? Because generally, it's one political party or the other that is seeing massive losses. But what I'm seeing is, across the board, incumbents and establishment candidates are being annihilated.
No, I think that's absolutely right. This is different. I think there's been periods of time when people get very frustrated, like you indicate. They might shift back and forth from one party to the other. But right now, they're unhappy with both parties. But the real tragedy is that we don't have a good, and I say this word cautiously, a democratic process, the democratic election, the ability of parties to compete. There's a monopoly control by the Republicans and the Democrats, and since philosophically they're not too far apart, they sort of gang up on anybody who wants to offer an alternative. So if we had had a very strong third party, so here all the people talk about the Tea Party as if it's a party, but it really isn't a party. It's an alternative, and that's why the mixture comes up, because sometimes Democrats are in trouble, sometimes Republicans are in trouble, but there's no one party to fulfill the role that is necessary, and I don't think that's going to happen soon, because the laws make it very difficult to get on ballots, and the media doesn't allow people to get into the debates and this sort of thing. So they're very, very handicapped. I just think that we're going to see this messy situation, but I think it's just great that people are unhappy, they're very active, they want changes, and they're picking and choosing, and they're sending a loud message, and both parties are getting a little bit upset. I mean, Republicans, in one sense, they say, these Tea Party people, they're a little bit nuts. We can't deal with them. But then when they find out the Tea Party is a political force, they say, I guess we better deal with them. So they're in a dilemma, too. I think it'll work out as long as the people who are unhappy stick to their guns and say, and trying to agree on some basic principles. We either have too much government or too little government. We either spend too much money or too little bit of spend the money. We either have a lousy foreign policy or we don't have it. So I think those are the kind of things that we have to stick to our guns and be as consistent as possible, and to see what we can do to contribute to a positive change in this country.
There's no doubt, Congressman, I want to get your breakdown on this, that the establishment is scared, though, and they're going to pull out all the stops to try to demonize any type of true grassroots constitutionalist candidate. I mean, we're seeing them say, if you're against the health care bill, you must be a racist. But I think they've overplayed their hand by running around like chickens with their heads cut off.
Yeah, and that's been around, but it's around right now a whole lot because the Tea Party movement is so much bigger. But I can remember in 1996, and I don't know exactly what you were doing in 96, but when I was trying to get back into Congress, both Republicans and Democrats said, well, this guy's crazy. You know, he's even critical of the federal war on drugs. Anybody that's critical on the war on drugs must mean he wants to give drugs to kids, you know, that sort of thing. So they tried real hard to demonize me then, but I came back with honest answers, said that now the war on drugs doesn't work. I don't want to use drugs. I don't want to use drugs on my kids. I take care of women delivering babies. They emphasize the evil and the harm of drugs. You know, we won that argument. So they will always try to demonize individuals, but more so today than ever before, because, like you say, they were trying to turn it around. And just because we oppose something that Obama proposes, you must be a racist. You know, it's the demagogues. It's the demagogues that really bugged me.
But, in 96, I was interviewing you when you were getting back into office, and I do remember that, and they a few years ago, had your head floating around out in space, always trying to make you look like the outsider. But as many newspapers have reported, your views, the Constitution, my views, are now the majority view, and the establishment is desperate and is very, very afraid. What else do you see them from your years of research and experiencing this in Congress? What else do you think the big central banks and others are going to do to try to keep control of the people?
Well, I think whatever they think is necessary, and I had some information passed on to me, sort of inside information of somebody who knew somebody that was well-tuned to the people at the Federal Reserve, and they say they are really, really concerned about our movement to expose the Fed for what they're doing. Not so much that they think tomorrow we're going to have a victory and have a thorough audit and the Fed is going to end, but what they're upset or worried about is the fact that more and more people are aware of the Federal Reserve now like never before, and exposure is the most important thing. Then the changes will come and the reforms will come. So they know exactly what we've been talking about. I think that's where we've had such a tremendous success in the freedom movement in the last decade or so, is that people have become aware of the power of the Federal Reserve. And well, I'm so delighted when I go to the universities and the next generation will know about the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve was something you never even learned about in college. I mean, they just fluffed over this. It wasn't important. They took care of us. They knew how to run the economy. That has ended, and I think even those who defend the Fed are very frightened about it.
Did you have a chance to see Zbigniew Brzezinski's speech to the CFR last week? Because he said, for the first time in world history, the planet is awake to us and our move for global government. And he basically said, we are in trouble.
I didn't see that, but I hope he has some real reasons to be worried about that. But was it Biden that said something the other day that Brussels should be the capital for the free world or something like that?
Yeah, they're really coming out in the open with their world government because we've exposed it. And I want to run rapid fire now through a bunch of different issues while we have you. We're very honored to have Congressman Ron Paul with us today live on the 26th day of May 2010. You mentioned the war on drugs. I saw an interview with you back in the late 1980s. And you were talking about the CIA who'd been caught shipping in heroin then. And a few months ago, you gave a speech and said there's been a CIA coup in America. Since then, it's been in the New York Times, the Washington Post, AFP, French news agency, and even Geraldo Rivera on Fox. They go, yes, our troops are helping grow the opium for the farmers, because if they don't, Al-Qaeda will get it and sell it. What an amazing move to go from denying that they're producing it and shipping a lot of it in to saying, oh, yes, we have to, or Al-Qaeda would get it. Well, if you just decriminalized it, that would take the money out, and then Al-Qaeda, as they call it, wouldn't. I mean, that was the excuse on the crack cocaine. Well, we've got to ship the cocaine in, or the communist, you know, will get the money. Can you speak to that, sir?
Well, I don't have the absolute proof of it, but my suspicion is, and just because of the stories you hear, I think they really want drugs to be illegal, because I think that's the way they raise money for their governments. That's off the books. You know, they own banks. They can get involved in enterprise, and they have to get their cash, and it never comes through. Well, not all of it. Some of it will come through appropriations and legally, even though we don't know where it goes and who controls it. But they even need even more money because they're doing so much. There's so much activity going on. So in many ways, they are very, very powerful, and it is in their interest to keep the drug war going. So it's a bit of an irony that some very, very sincere church-believing people who want to take care of the kids believe that, you know, we have to keep this war going. At the same time, they're allies, inadvertently allies, with the drug dealers who want the drugs to be kept illegal. And then you point out, well, that the government and the CIA is involved as well.
So who are you? Yeah, who are you? Yeah, who are you?
Well, Congressman, I know you're super busy and none of us can be on top of everything, but would you like us to send you a packet of mainstream news where they just calmly admit that, okay, our troops, I mean, they had Araldo Rivera with a Marine Corps commander with the troops explaining why they helped the farmers grow the opium. I mean, they're now basically bringing this out and hiding it in plain view.
Well, I've seen some of that, but I can always look at more material when it's available.
Well, here's one more issue on that subject. Did you see the Washington Post 2 days ago? CIA unit's wacky idea depicts Saddam as gay. And then in the article, it quotes them as admitting that the CIA put out at least one fake Osama bin Laden video. That sounds like that should be a congressional investigation.
Yeah, there's so many things that should be congressional investigations that sometimes, though, it becomes difficult if you hear of a real problem. I think, well, I guess I ought to report this. Where should I go? The FBI and the CIA, and they'll investigate it for me? Well, who's going to investigate the investigators? And that's our job, and that's what our responsibility is, to hopefully wake up enough people to find out who to believe and who not to believe.
Congressman, getting into what's happening on the economic front, we read your quotes a few weeks ago about Bernie Sanders, paraphrasing, you know, basically he sold out or he flip-flopped, and then Grayson running around saying, we beat the Fed. What, I mean, you're the real expert in Congress recognized on this with the Fed. What really happened?
Well, we got 1207 passed into the House reform bill, and that bill passed on the House floor. The big vote was in the committee, so that's in there, even though it's in a very bad bill. When it got to the Senate, Bernie Sanders is the one that introduced 1207 and 604, I believe, in the Senate. And at the last minute, he changed his mind and took what the establishment agreed to, another severely watered-down version of it. It wasn't really an audit. It was just a glimpse of what's been going on for the past 2 years, which it had already agreed to. But it passed, like, I think, 96-0, and the administration agreed to it. Obama said he'd sign it, and Democratic and Republican leadership agreed to that. And then the 1207 version was brought up by Vitter, and when that got to the Senate floor, we only got 37 votes. So I think people should pay attention to those who did not vote for the real audit language in the Senate. And this, to me, is a bailout for, you know, the system and for the Federal Reserve. But now they have finally passed that version in the Senate, and it's going to conference. So I'm trying to keep an eye on that very closely and see if we can influence the conference. And I just don't know whether we get that modified or what will happen. But I think right now the cards are stacked against us. But we're going to keep fighting, because the more tension we get and the more the people know, I think we can be proud of how far we've gotten already and how much people know about it.
Well, that's right, Congressman. 25 years ago, you didn't get one co-sponsor when you were first in Congress. Now you passed it in the House. It went to the Senate. I saw a headline where you were saying that those that voted against your audit, the Fed bill, will be held accountable, though, by the voters.
Oh, yeah, they should be. And every time, I mean, you think of the Republicans will retaliate against Republicans. And, I mean, we saw that in Utah. So these votes are very important. And, you know, the bailout vote was crucial in a lot of this stimulus for the Tea Party movement. So this is just another vote that we can use and help alert the people.
We've only got about 6 minutes left with Congressman Ron Paul. His time is so precious. We're going to give you some websites before he leaves so you can get involved in the Campaign for Liberty or Rand Paul's campaign, which is so important. But looking at the border situation, the Deputy Homeland Security Director said last Friday that they may not process illegals referred to them from Arizona. I've already seen previous reports of where sheriffs and others release illegals for serious crimes out of jail, and the feds won't pick them up. I mean, is this not serious dereliction of duty and or treason by Homeland Security?
You know, so much could be solved with our use of our Constitution and the principle of private property. If you have somebody walking your house and they're trespassing, and they might not have even committed a crime, they might not have, you know, shot anybody or stolen anything yet, they trespass, just trespass, and they walk in your house, and they have no right to be there. We call the police, and the police call them, and they prosecute them. But they don't apply that to people who are walking across this land and walking across these ranches. As a matter of fact, even if you do anything to stop trespassers, you can get into trouble. You're taking the law into your own hands. The states aren't allowed to do what they should do. And when the states finally get totally frustrated, they have to pass a law that then is argued about. I have some reservations about that law, but not about the intent and what they're trying to do and the dereliction of duty of the federal government. I would like to see more approach to this. That when, if you can't get them at the border and stop the influx, then as soon as they apply, for benefits, then that's when we should deal with
it. I agree. Deny them the welfare benefits, and that will stop. But the government, again, wants this dependent group. Were you in the chamber when Calderon lectured and said, repass the assault weapons ban, effectively taking semi-automatics from American people?
Nope, I wasn't there, and that's a personal thing with me. There's a limit to what I can actually tolerate some days. So I did listen to it on TV and all, but I didn't feel like I should be present there.
I mean, did that disgust you?
Yeah. I mean, it disgusted me, but I knew what he was going to say, and why do we give? I mean, about a couple of years ago, they had Karzai down there. I mean, Karzai is just our henchman that we have a hard gun. And they have him here down there as a head of a state and talking to a joint session of Congress. I mean, that's more than I need.
Well, his brother is admittedly, even in the New York Times, the top opium king.
and yet, in one of these days, we'll depose him. Something will happen. He'll be gone. And, the big thing over there right now is this battle is about to start in Afghanistan. And there's no guarantees that even with all our military might that we're going to have a military victory there. We will not have a political victory. It'll be a political defeat because it'll just further stimulate hatred and all the other problems that you get by occupation of foreign countries. But militarily, whether this battle can be won is the real question.
Specifically, with the entire geopolitical situation, North Korea on a war footing, the Pentagon saying they're ready for war. Meanwhile, our own government helped give the reactors to North Korea, as you know. You've got the Israel saying they may strike Iran. Obama saying he would support them if they did. You've got the Predator drones, 1,000 of them now, going in to Pakistan, which many experts say is an act of war. You've said the Iran sanctions are an act of war. I mean, it looks like the buildup to World War I or World War II. Can you speak to the overall atmosphere?
Well, it sort of blows my mind when I think about our financial crisis and not only the meltdown of the European nations, but ours as well. And that they hardly blink an eye that they can talk about spreading this war in the Middle East into Iran to continue the civilian CIA bombing of these various countries. But this thing in Korea, it's way out of proportion to what we should be doing.
Get more into the oil spill disaster and evidence that it's more and more looks like a false flag coming up in the next hour. We'll get into the economy and a lot more. Don't forget, I'm a documentary filmmaker. I've produced over 20 films. I've directed more than 20, produced several others, Loose Change, Final Cut, Invisible Empire, A New World Order Defined. They're all available at InfoWars.com. And I know that you, the audience of this transmission, are extremely informed, extremely well-researched. In many cases, you're more informed than I am in specific areas of specialty that you've done more research into. But your friends, your family, your children, your grandparents, your parents, your neighbor, your employees, your bosses, the folks at your church or your synagogue or your whatever the case may be, they know something's wrong now, but they don't know the specifics. It is so vital to get Endgame Blueprint for Global Enslavement Invisible Empire, New Order Defined, The Obama Deception, Fall of the Republic, Terror Storm. Films and materials that we offer at Infowars.com, and to get them out to people now. And best-selling books like Seeds of Destruction, exposing industry and government lies about the safety of genetically engineered foods you're eating, Jeffrey M. Smith. He's very conservative. He's very careful. He understates it, and the understatement is absolutely devastating. There is no doubt that they know that these GMO foods are causing low birth weight, sterilization, reduced fertility, toxic problems. Seeds of Deception is such an important book. And then he has one that's like a textbook, Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risk of Genetically Engineered Foods, Jeffrey M. Smith, author of the number one international bestseller, Seeds of Deception. By the way, they're all available at Infowars.com. Immune dysfunction, chronic illness, inflammation, death, 65 health risks, suppressed science and cover-ups, misfortune that the people are going through is just horrible. We need to warn the public. Misinformed Congress and regulators. This film is really my favorite. We've also got some films he's involved with, all available at Infowars.com. And your purchase of the books and videos supports my operation and the authors and filmmakers who books and videos we carry, like Jesse Ventura's American Conspiracy, number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list, and all the other great suppressed things. They've just republished Fletcher Prouty's The Secret Team, How the Government Really Works. He was the head of Black Ops in the Pentagon, liaison to the CIA. That book's now back in print, available at Infowars.com. Or call toll-free 888-253-3139. You can also write to me, P.O. Box 19549, Austin, Texas 78760. But whatever you do, don't procrastinate. Get involved today. Start reaching out to people. They're ready to hear the truth. Jeffrey Smith is the founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology, whose mission is to promote the responsible use of technology and stop genetically engineered foods and crops through grassroots and national strategies. He's an acclaimed international speaker, trusted authority on GMOs, best-selling author, admired filmmaker. Seedsofdeception.com. Seedsofdeception.com is the website. I wanted to get him on because I've literally seen hundreds of studies out of Canada, England, China, Japan, the United States. I've interviewed, former GMO company heads who found that it was, really hurting the guinea pigs and mice and rats. I've talked to other GMO heads who would say, look, this stuff's sterilizing the rats, reducing fertility. They'd say, well, that's not a problem, is it? There's too many people. So the point is, whether you think there's too many people or not, we shouldn't have forced medication going on. And the bigger issue is this is irrevocably altering the DNA of the human species. So in the next 22 minutes, I wanted to get Jeffrey Smith's take on all of this. He would be with us longer, but he's on the road making a film right now. Here's the headline. Research links genetically modified food to long-term sterility. A new study done by Russian scientists suggests that genetically modified food may cause, kind of like jumping in front of a bus going 100 miles an hour, might hurt you. A new study done by Russian scientists suggests that genetically modified food may cause long-term sterility. That is sterility in the second and third generations. The scientists used hamsters for the research and divided them into groups. One group of hamsters was fed normal diet without any soy products. A second group was fed non-GMO, genetically modified organism soy. The third ate GMO soy, and the fourth group was fed an even higher amount of GMO soy than the third. Each group produced about 7 of 8 litters of baby hamsters, each without any problems. But when the research selected new breeding pairs from the offspring, the second generation had a slower growth rate. And a bunch of other studies show that our guest will go over in a moment, and research their sexual maturity later than normal. They also had a mortality rate 5 times higher. Oh, you like live until 25 instead of 100? That's what we're talking about. That's 100, 5 times lower is 25. They also had a mortality rate 5 times higher than the hamsters did who ate the soy. Even more shocking was the fact that nearly all of the third generation GMO soy hamsters were sterile and also experienced hair growth inside their mouths. There's photos of that. And it goes on. Now here, perfect soft kill weapon. Mercury in the vaccines has been shown within one generation to reduce fertility and damage DNA. Folks, this is real. And we already have massive sperm count lowered levels. We have massive infertility in women. You know about it. You see it in the news. All right, I'm going to shut up for the next two segments and go to Jeffrey Smith, author of Genetic Roulette, which is so important to get, folks. Jeffrey, break down this new study by the Russians, and then let's go into some of the other studies we've seen.
Yeah, so they actually, the scientists I spoke with said it was just a routine study. They just simply fed hamsters genetically modified soy in those four groups you said, non-GM soy, GM soy, high GM soy, and no soy. And there was no problem in the groups that were eating the normal natural soy as part of their diet or no soy at all. But those that ate the genetically engineered soy, they didn't actually show the problems in the first generation. The second generation was slower growth, slower onset for maturity, but by the third generation, that's when the boom hit. And that was when nearly all of the adults had lost the ability to have babies. And the infant mortality rate, the rate at which they died at birth or soon after, that was five times higher in one of the GM soy groups and four times higher in the other, compared to the control. So you had both a level of infertility, slower growth, and also a higher death rate among the babies. Now, this man, Alexei Surov, had done some research on hamsters before and found quite a rare situation where hair and mucus would form inside the mouth of the hamsters. The pictures are so disgusting that when I posted my article on Huffington Post, I didn't put the picture there. I just linked to it in case people wanted to see it because I didn't want to force them. But it's just that, you know, inside the teeth, big gaping holes with hair and mucus growing in there. And this was published in a study by Surov some months before. But what he found out was that the group that was eating the genetically modified soy had a much higher incidence of this rare disorder than he had ever seen in his study, suggesting that there may be some very significant disorders resulting from the genetically engineered soy. Now, I asked him at this point, he released his information as part of a report on April 15th, and I asked him when it would be published, and that would be in the summer. And he was cautious. He said, we don't know if it's the genetically engineered component. We don't know if it's the extra Roundup herbicide on the soy. Let me explain what that means to those who are not familiar with GMOs. The primary reason why people genetically modify crops is so they can drink a poisonous herbicide and not die. And Roundup is the most popular. So you have Roundup ready soybeans, corn, cotton, canola, and sugar beets that you can spray with a toxic Roundup herbicide, and it will kill all of the other plant biodiversity, but not the Roundup ready crop. Now, I am learning just this month that the Roundup itself has components in it that might promote sterility. And what happens is, and this is, I'm saying might because I'm still investigating, and even once I've fully investigated, I probably would be cautious on the...
And, of course, this is Monsanto of Agent Orange fame.
Yes, exactly. Monsanto is the one that produces Roundup. They produced, they're one of the producers of Agent Orange, and, of course, PCBs. And they're in charge, by the way, to determine if their GM foods are safe.
Just last month, Obama appointed the head regulator at the Food and Drug Administration as the former Monsanto executive.
Yes, exactly. Michael Taylor, he's the U.S. food safety czar in charge of the U.S. food supply. He was the one that was in charge of policy at the FDA when the FDA said no testing was necessary. And it was based on a policy that claimed that the FDA wasn't aware of information showing that GMOs were different. But documents made public from a lawsuit shows, of course, that that was a lie, because the overwhelming consensus among the FDA's own scientists were that GMOs were not only different but inherently dangerous and could create things like allergens, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. But the person in charge of that policy, Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney and later Monsanto's vice president, I believe, because he put that policy through, is responsible probably for more food-related illnesses and deaths than anyone in human history, and he is in charge of the food safety in the United States.
Amazing. Now, again, this isn't just one prestigious Russian study, though. I mean, again, you have it all in your book, meticulously documented. But I've seen countless studies, not just in rats or mice or hamsters or rabbits that they tend to test on, but that they've done studies showing humans with lower birth rate and higher mortality, and that it's not just this type of soybean, whether it's the poison or the soybean itself, but separately in other GMO crops that are GMO not for a pesticide-related reason, but for, say, a flavor reason or for a longevity reason. I mean, this is really beginning to become crystal clear in focus.
Well, let's talk first about the animal studies, and then let's take a look for correlation in human studies. We do know, for example, that there are indigenous people in Argentina who've been sprayed by Roundup by plane, and they're complaining of birth defects. And possible there might be sterility there too, infertility, but I'm not sure. But I think we can look with more confidence at the animal feeding studies. In fact, the most important one, I think, that follows the hamster one, was done 5 years earlier also by someone with the Russian Academy of Sciences. And it was Irina Ermakova, a senior researcher at the Academy, and she just completely innocently fed genetically modified soy flour. It was from Archer Daniels Midland variety, bought in the store, the same kind that we eat here. And she fed it to female rats starting 2 weeks before they got pregnant and continued feeding them through pregnancy and lactation, and then started feeding the offspring as part of their diet. What was interesting was that when the babies were born, many of the babies were smaller, quite a bit smaller, when they were from the GM-fed mothers, but most importantly, more than half of them died within 3 weeks. The control group that ate the GM, the non-GM soy, only 1 in 10 died. So it was a fivefold increase in infant mortality. With the hamster study we just discussed, there was a difference of fivefold, and that was 25% versus 5%, or in another group, 20% versus 5%. So it was 4 or 5 times higher with the hamsters, and it was 5 times higher with the rats. Now, what was interesting with the Ermakova study is she, of course, was attacked and vilified by the biotech industry. She published her research as preliminary, asking for more money to do follow-up research, but never got it. In fact, she told me after we spoke at the European Parliament together that her boss had been told by his boss that, under pressure, that she couldn't do any more GM research. So one of her colleagues actually tried to comfort her by saying, well, maybe the GM soy will solve the overpopulation problem on Earth, and she wasn't comforted. But what happened was when she was attacked by the biotech industry, one of the valid issues was that she never did a biochemical analysis of the feed to see if there might be a toxin in the bag of flour. But after she had completed her research 3 times with similar results, coincidentally, the Russian Academy of Sciences facility where she was working started feeding all of the rats a rat chow based on genetically modified soy, and she had a brilliant idea of simply asking her colleagues after 2 months, what was the infant mortality rate in their study? They weren't studying GMOs. They just happened to be feeding all of the rats GM soy. It turns out it had skyrocketed to over 55%. This suggests it's not some obscure toxin that had made its way into her particular batch, but it was more likely a generic problem. In addition, when you go back further, Italian researchers fed genetically modified soy to mice, and they found that the testicles were damaged, the structure and function of the testicles were changed, including the young sperm cell. And when they looked at the offspring in the embryo stage, a very, very young embryo stage, they removed it from the wombs of the pregnant mice who had been eating genetically modified soy or natural soy. And they found that those that had been eating genetically modified soy, the embryo DNA functioned differently. So Ermakova, this was in Italy, Ermakova in back in Moscow, she decided to feed GM soy also to male rats, and she showed me the picture, which I use in my presentation, and the testicles changed from pink to blue. So normally the testicles are pink in male rats, and she showed the controls, and they were pink, but they were blue and those that were fed genetically modified soy.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And now, what is it, 8 major food crops are being genetically engineered, and now they want to go to hundreds?
Oh, that's right. Exactly. The goal of Monsanto, the explicit goal, is to genetically engineer 100% of all the commercial seeds in the world and patent them, and they have a plan to achieve it. Now, it doesn't stop with soy. We also have evidence of infertility with corn, and we also have it with the GM cotton. With the corn, the Austrian government fed genetically modified corn that was both Roundup ready and also produced its own toxic pesticide called BT. It was both events in the same gene, in the same DNA. So they found that the more of this corn that they fed to mice, the fewer the babies they had and the smaller the babies were.
And by the way, large portions of the corn and things we now eat in the United States are of these GMO varieties.
Yeah, about 85% of the corn. Now,
folks, you're having your family line annihilated right now. You're being you're under assault, and you know, if you walked up and punched a cop in the face, you go to prison. But they feed this to the cops, and the cops just love it. I mean, I'm just pointing out that we're all being assaulted.
So we've seen this also in livestock. I happen to discover a new source that changed his animals to non-GM feed and found that the litters got bigger. I do know of about 24 farmers that claim that certain varieties of GM corn caused their pigs or cows to become sterile. Some pigs had false pregnancies or gave birth to bags of water.
This isn't a joke. This isn't a game. And most of the food we eat now, when you go to a Mexican food restaurant and eat corn chips, it's frying you. Now, we can say no. We can take control of our society. We can demand real organic food. We can demand the feds don't change the organic descriptions to where it can be non-organic. This is life and death, and I know this stuff, and it's hard for me to not forget what I'm doing, but I've got to take care of my children. I've got to make sure they can have a healthy life and have grandchildren. This is eugenics. Make no mistake. Continuing, sir, you could go on for hours. What about the study? I was talking to you about that genetic engineer out of England who's just had a stroke, unfortunately, but I've interviewed him years ago, you know, who found similar things in his studies. Talk about that.
Well, this is Dr. Arpad Pusztai, a very interesting case. He is the world's leading researcher in his field and was granted a $3 million by the UK government to create a way to test for the safety of GMOs, which was supposed to be implemented into the EU law. But what happened was he accidentally discovered that GM foods are very dangerous, that his rats, after 10 days, had smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, damaged immune system, and potentially precancerous cell growth in the digestive tract. He went public with his concerns and was a hero for about 2 days at his institute. And then the pro-GM UK Prime Minister's office apparently placed 2 phone calls to the director of the institute on a Tuesday afternoon. On a Wednesday morning, Dr. Pusztai's contract was canceled, his data was withdrawn, his team was dismantled, they never implemented the protocols. In fact, they told him if he spoke at all about his research, he would be sued. They went through a whole process to try and trash his reputation, to promote the biotechnology industry, and what he had discovered was very interesting. You see, he fed rats a potato that was genetically engineered with a gene that produces an insecticide. But he had tested the insecticide over and over again on rats and knew it was safe. In fact, in his study, he fed some rats the natural potato spiked with the insecticide and others eating the genetically engineered potato that produced the insecticide from within each cell. But only those that ate the GM potato, the genetically modified potato, got these illnesses and got this sickness.
So it's the way the poison was being delivered.
Exactly. It was the process of genetically engineering the potato that caused the problem, and that was what his great concern for him was, because he was aware that the same process was used to create the soy and corn and tomatoes.
And it was eating their livers. Folks, you know, you don't drink Jack Daniels because you don't want to die of liver failure. Hell, you eat potatoes and corn, you get it. I mean, this is serious.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Thank you for joining us. We're now into the second hour. It is Sunday. You're listening on Sunday, June 13th, 2010. Another hour laying out before us. We've got Jim Tucker with a boil down of what happened at Bilderberg 2010 and key intel on the green lighting. They're moving towards the majority of them green lighting an attack on Iran. And then, of course, Charlie Skelton, Mark Anderson, and others. That is coming up. But I wanted to get into fluoride right now. What business does the federal government have mandating the states and holding back their money if they don't fluoridate at least one part per million the water supply? When you hear the term fluoride, the bigger issue is that's a catch-all name for at least 150 chemicals they add in some cities, over 300, the byproduct waste of fertilizer plants, aluminum plants, and nuclear weapons purification, and also fuel rod production for nuclear power plants. I know you know that as listeners, but are you continuing to warn the public? We're seeing huge media propaganda right now pushing how great fluoride is for people because we're having major breakthroughs. I've caught them finagling now on the backs of toothpaste tubes. Before, they said, if you swallow more than a pea size of this, call poison control. Now it has some gibberish and doesn't even make sense, not even proper English. It just says, if you, call poison control immediately. So they've cut the pea size out. Very bizarre. EPA scientists and workers call for an end to water fluoridation because of cancer risk. This is from Organic Consumer Association. Now, I interviewed these guys in 2001 and 2005. And then when I talk about how the majority of EPA scientists and FDA have done it as well, sent letters, their top toxicologists, you name it. In fact, it was over 90%. And then the head of their union, who's a toxicologist, testified before Congress in 2000 and again in 2005. Whenever I talk about this, I get emails saying, that's not true. There's not people in the government that don't like it. It's good for you. You know, come on, Squidbillies on Adult Swim on Cartoon Network says it's good. You know, Ted Turner, the eugenics guy, he owns it. He says it's good. You know, Barack Hussein Obama wants to sterilize us. You know, they make jokes on cartoons about this, but it's true. It's real. EPA scientists and workers call for an end to water fluoridation because of cancer risk. This is from Organic Consumer Association, and you can read it from ens-newswire.com. This is from 2005, August 30th, but I'm going to get these guys back on the show. It's been 5 years. EPA union calls for nationwide moratorium on fluoridation, congressional hearings on adverse effects, your cancer cover-up, youth cancer cover-up, D.C., 11 EPA employee unions representing over 7,000 environmental and public health professionals of the civil service have called for a moratorium on drinking water fluoridation programs across the country and have asked the EPA management to recognize fluoride as posing a risk, a serious risk of causing cancer in people. The unions acted following revelations of the apparent cover-up of evidence from the Harvard School of Dental Medicine linking fluoridation with elevated risk of fatal bone cancer in young boys, more than doubles it. The unions sent letters to a key congressional committee asking Congress to legislate a moratorium pending a review of all the science of the risk and benefits of fluoridation. The letter cited the weight and evidence supporting a classification of fluoride as a likely human carcinogen, which includes other epidemiological results similar to those in the Harvard study, animal studies, and biological reasons why fluoride can reasonably be expected to cause the bone cancer or osteosarcoma seen in young boys and test animals. The unions also pointed out that recent work by Richard Moss of the Environmental Quality Institute, University of North Carolina, that links increase in lead levels in drinking water systems to the use of silicofluoride fluoridating agents with chloramines disinfectant. That's also being added to your water. Lead. Everyone knows lead and mercury is good. Don't listen to conspiracy theorist Alex Jones or all the EPA scientists. All right. Again, we'll cover this more coming up on Monday because I'm going to really get back into all the poison, how they're poisoning us by design, these degenerate control freaks. But coming up, Charlie Skelton, London Guardian, Jim Tucker, Mark Anderson on Club Bilderberg 2010 and the rout of this scum. Great job, crew, I want to add today, in here on Sunday.
Nothing, nothing,
Now going to Charlie Skelton, who got arrested last year. We were able to actually have him on from the police station when he still had his cell phone. An Oxford University graduate, journalist for the Evening Standard, The Guardian. He also writes satire and has written quite a few books. And we'll give you his website before he leaves us. He's on TV shows on Channel 4, reality TV, and BBC One. And, of course, in 2009, he covered the secret of Bilderberg Group. He went to basically write satire about it as a joke, but found out it wasn't a joke. And he also writes for the London Guardian. He joins us now from Spain outside the Bilderberg Group resort that they shut down today. So first off, Charlie, good to have you back this year. Tell us about how you got there. You were in the resort, what you saw being thrown out, the type of security you're witnessing right now.
Hello, Alex. We spent a couple of nights in the hotel a little bit cheekily before lockdown, which took place at noon today. And all the guests left over the last few days because they have the Bilderberg block booking, and they're replaced by the conference organisers who are up to their ears in it, and more and more security men who are just piling in at the moment. And And the police are piling in, and police helicopters are taking to the skies, and it's the same old thing. You know, it feels very much like Vouliagmenia in Greece last year. In fact, the hotel was very similar. It's up on a hill. There's a small little road that leads up to it, and it's just by the seaside, and, you know, it's a small little sleepy town.
And the supreme leaders up in their citadel above the rabble scum.
Very much. That is exactly what is happening, and there's the same dynamic of a very few. I mean, more this year, but a few people coming to bear witness to the event.
Pathetic rabble down beneath the walls, with our centurions keeping a close eye on the dangerous scallywags.
There's quite a lot of that, actually. We have a. We overheard a few conversations, and we have a source in the conference team as well. And
that's big news. You have a source inside the conference team. You were in there and overheard. So just like when I was in, I can back this up, when I was in Canada, but really in Virginia, I was in there the day they shut it down and kind of stayed till the end, till they were trying to throw us out. And there were like security teams, and I was, you know, catching all of it. And every spare room and office area was packed full of security people. Tell us as much as you can about the source without revealing them, and tell us what you overheard, Mr. Skelton.
Well, I can't tell you anything. I'm not going to tell you anything about the source, but I will tell you some interesting things. One of them is that there's a no-fly zone for 4 days over the hotel, and that's being enforced by police helicopters, and that begins at 8 a.m. Tomorrow, which is the first official day of the conference. We spoke to a barman there, and a barman. And we were talking about the cost of this whole thing, and he just said, look, you do not want to know how much this is costing. And, you know, when you think of I can't quite get past it in my mind, the sheer cost of this operation, it is huge. And if anyone thinks that it's not a large event, it is. I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, it's
and of course, the taxpayers pay with our tax money to protect the criminal rulers.
And to be honest, I don't think the Spanish taxpayers are in any position to be paying for this kind of circus right now.
Well, listen, we're going to know more as the days develop and as you talk to journalists and your source. But, I mean, what can you tell me about what you overheard? What can you tell me about what the source told you?
Well, I can confirm some delegates who are coming. Some of them, they tend to come every year. There's Richard Holbrook, the Obama special representative to Afghanistan and Pakistan. He'll be there. General Jack Keane, who I think he was in charge of your army at some point for some years. And interesting, a new name, I think, which is Marcus Agius, who's chairman of Barclays. And he's also senior non-executive director on the new BBC executive board. So it's interesting. The BBC may not be here covering the event live on the ground, but they do have someone inside. But actually, I mustn't badmouth the BBC because they put me on the radio this morning, on Radio 4, the BBC, BBC Radio 4 Today program, and had a nice chat. And it wasn't...
Called this a loss of innocence last year because, you weren't really expecting to be clapped in irons.
I really wasn't. I wasn't quite expecting... I didn't have any idea, to be honest, what was going to happen at all. And, you know, to find yourself in a completely dystopian reality and with, an extraordinary overreaction
Let's recap for those that forgot what happened last year to a London Guardian reporter. You got video of it being followed, harassed, arrested. There'd be police all around you, and you'd say, stop following me, and they'd say, no one's following you, and you go to the police station to complain, and then you see the guys that have been following you there, and they say, you're not seeing any of that, sir. You're quite insane. And then they finally did arrest you. So recap that, and let's go back to this first look at Bilderberg 2010 and the valuable intel you've already ferreted out.
Well, 2009 was my loss of innocence. I sat there in the in the Athens. I had to run away to Athens because I was being chased around and arrested so much in Budiakmeni. And I really wasn't trying to do anything at all. You described me early on as a daring reporter. You know, that couldn't be further from the truth. I spent all of 2009 trying not to get arrested. And, my plan for 2010 is very much along the same lines, not to get arrested. Last year I sat in an office in Athens opposite, he was the head of the Athens state police that look after the parliament and after their government, so very high up. And, I said, look, I've worked out, I realise who's been following me, it is you, it's your team. I've seen the guy in the loo just now, weirdly, and having been denied all the way along. And he just said, no, you didn't see a man. And, I sat there and I thought, my God, that's a scene from a movie. You don't want to be sitting opposite someone telling you you haven't seen what you've just seen, because it makes you think, you're going to start seeing ones and zeros and the matrix will melt away, and you think, whatever. It's very unsettling.
But that's their psychological. I mean, they've got Von Rumpy, Brown, all of them announcing world government run by the bankers that have engineered the financial collapse. We have their documents from over a decade ago planning this. And then they'll announce world government and then say, but we're not setting up a world government, and you're quite insane if you believe in one. I'm afraid it doesn't exist.
I know. Look, I mean, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of ringing up, reputable news agencies, and I'm not going to name any names, and speaking to, people who work on their foreign news desk, and you say, well, I'm here in Spain covering the Bilderberg conference, and they go, the what? And, I'm thinking, look, I mean, this is a big deal. It really is a big deal.
If you had 150, you've all heard it before, top football players meeting in secret, there'd be 50 helicopters above and 1,000 press. If you had 150 top Hollywood stars meeting in secret, and they've been doing it since 54, you'd have 1,000 helicopters and 5,000 press. But with this, it's just, you don't see those black sedans pulling in. You don't see the troops with machine guns. You don't see police dogs. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that, do you know what? I don't have a problem with a bunch of financiers and business people getting together to meet up to determine how to fleece, me and whoever, or to sell me whatever mobile phone or anything. I don't care. They can strategize to their heart's content. But, we've got a new coalition in Britain, and what David Cameron, who's an ex-Bilderberg, and Nick Clegg like to talk about at the moment is transparency and openness, and they want that in our politics. Let's find out whether that's the case, but they do keep saying we want transparency and we want openness.
Well, that's like Obama. He said he's going to be the most transparent. He's more secretive than Bush. It's always the opposite with these guys when they tell you something.
Yeah, well, and do you know what? It would be nice if, in the spirit of openness and transparency, we simply knew which elected officials went to this four-day meeting and what they talked about in terms of policy.
They're drinking their finest champagne and gobbling caviar, having a big eugenics summit, dealing with world forced inoculations, cutting off power supplies, stopping mobility. We're going to be talking with Charlie Skelton of the London Guardian. He's also written for the Evening Standard and reports for BBC One. The list goes on and on. Here are the headlines. We've got one by Paul Joseph Watson today. This is being reported by the major French news. At a press conference, he snuck into Spain, got caught there, and now admits that eugenicist Bill Gates to attend 2010 Bilderberg conference. But the really big news, because it shows how scared they are internally, and it shows this mirrors what Zbigniew Brzezinski said 3 weeks ago in Canada when he said, for the first time, the whole world is awake to world government and not just our puppet politicians, but the actual power structure. We're in trouble. People said, well, he's playing possum. No, he's not playing possum. And so Bilderberg see people with income as threat to their agenda. This was filed in part two of his London Guardian report, Bilderberg 2010, the security lockdown, Charlie Skelton. And he joins us. He can now tell us the day he was kicked out Wednesday before it started. Always key intel. What security people did to him and his wife. What he overheard them saying. And then he could tell us what happened yesterday and today. Charlie Skelton, thank you for joining us, sir.
Hello. Lovely to be back.
Good to have you. So you've got the floor. You can now, since you filed your reports, tell us, because, you know, it's good to give them the scoop first. They paid to send you there. You work for them. Tell us the incredible, what you witnessed inside, sneaking about, spying on them, and before they kicked you out, and then what's happened since then.
Yeah, well, first of all, to talk about what you mentioned, we sat ourselves at dinner next. This is a couple of days before the, in fact, the night before lockdown. So, whatever night that would have been, Tuesday night, we sat next to some of the conference organizers, because what people have to remember is that this is, apart from anything else, it's a big conference. So there's a large team of extremely well-oiled conference organizers who run the whole show every year, at least the core team members do. And they were having their dinner. And so we sat ourselves down nice and innocently next to their table, and we just sat and pretended to have a conversation all night whilst listening. So, we did a little bit of earwigging. And one of the things that we heard that was most astonishing was the discussion that took place about you and about your presence at Bilderberg with your bullhorn. And they started saying, you know, they said, you've seen the videos from that year. This is a quote. You've seen the videos from that year. They were very close to the hotel. And the person looked in absolute terror and said, but did they ever try to attack? And the person looked back equally fearful and said, no, but it was scary. It was very scary. There was a demonstration at the walls. And, did they ever try to attack? And they were asking this absolutely seriously. And they were having this discussion. And, you know, I'm here now I'm here with people, and the people who are standing here at the roundabout, much as you did before. And, you know, they're saying that. They're saying their slogans and they're holding their banners, and there's an awful lot of, there's a little bit of anger towards the people up the hill, but generally speaking, there's a lot of love towards humanity, and there's a lot of concern and anxiety. And what there isn't is there's no great attack going on. The only attack is an attack upon the ideas that are being talked about upstairs. The only attack is upon their strategies. But they, honestly, these people were sitting there and they had fear in their eyes, and it was quite extraordinary. So, you know, I don't quite, they've completely misunderstood at one level. I suppose in one level they've got it right, but they've completely misunderstood what kind of people are outside. You know, they have demonized the concerned, interested citizen who is standing out here, who has traveled to whatever part of the world Bilderberg happens to be in and is holding their flag and is chanting their chant. And they see these people as the enemy. And what they don't understand is that these people who are standing out here chanting, they are the true friends of humanity.
Well, that's the point you make in your well-written article. And I want to remind listeners, we contacted you last year, hearing that The Guardian was going to send a reporter, there was a big announcement and the paper was promoting it. We contacted you and you're like, oh, I, you know, kind of thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were sending a reporter who they thought would really, be balanced, because you thought it was a joke. And then once you got there and they harassed you and arrested you, you know, and now you've had this conversion of realizing, but you have some quotes here in your article. He says, It says, although quite why attending Bilderberg has to remain such a mystery remains a mystery. The blackened windows, the limousines, the desperate camera dodging of the delegates. The paranoia was riding high amongst the conference organizers. A pair of them talked about 2006 Bilderberg conference in Ottawa, where the radio host Alex Jones led the protest with his megaphone. They were very close to the hotel. You're quoted as them saying, said one. Another looked shocked and said, did they ever try to attack? A shake of the head, and the answer, no, but it was very scary. A third leaned in. This is the negative side of the welfare state. People have enough income so they can do this. It's like a permanent threat. And see, from what I've read by the phony environmentalist and the globalist, they want to shut the economy down, only allow authorized, permitted travel for government-approved reasons. They want a local environmental boss that controls every facet of your life. It has nothing to do with environment. It's prison. And they say they want a post-industrial world to control us so that we literally only live and work in one town and maybe get to travel once in our lives. This is the policy. So what you heard was a major window into the mindset, and they see us as the enemy because they have a predatory view on us, and so they subconsciously expect us to hate them and dislike them. And finishing up your eloquent writing here, you went on to make the point that no, this is humanity upset about being slaves, upset about being looted, upset about their elected leaders meeting in secret with the big owners. In fact, you said, what threat? The people concerned about this unfairness of the world should drape a banner over a police cordon, that they should shout their anger at the madness of asset-grabbing transnational corporations whose chairmen are sipping beers with our elected officials. It's like a permanent threat. Don't make me spit. And then it talks about them basically harassing you and your wife. Please continue.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear about who was saying this. The person that was, this conversation was being had by kind of people on the inner core of the Bilderberg Conference organization. So they're the kind of, they're the Bilderberg group people. They're the sort of people in charge of Bilderberg. They're not the people at Bilderberg who are the participants, but, you know, they're very close to the ideology of Bilderberg.
This is top minions, top minions.
Yeah, top minions, yeah. And, my God, the people are starting to talk about the cost of this. And a very interesting quote came out today, which is that it's simply to have, you know, there's all kinds of different police here. You know, there's secret police, there's state police, there's riot police, there's also local police. There's the Mossos de Squadra, which is the local Catalonian police, I think. And a quote has come out today that just to have them, I mean, they're just the very lowest, you know, of the police forces around. Just to have them is €150,000 per day. So the big question is, you know, who's picking up that tab? Is it the Spanish taxpayer? And if so, that's a disgrace. And if the Bilderberg Conference is reimbursing the Spanish taxpayer, then basically they're using the local police as a private army. So either way, it's grotesquely unethical.
The granddaddy of exposing the Bilderberg Group, and he's got to be proud of himself, 33, 34 years, covering it, going to every conference, being shot at in Portugal, you name it, being harassed, being arrested, being detained, going from the New York Times and Time Magazine just 10 years ago saying he was a nut and it didn't exist, to hundreds of newspapers, Germany, England, Australia, Spain, where the global government leaders are meeting. It is now mainstream news, and he's got moles inside, and he's there on the ground outside Barcelona as the world government meets. Jim Tucker, good to have you on with us.
Oh, always fun.
Jim, I know you're busy and exhausted, but...
Reach down and grab my satchel because I got information you want. Just bear with me a minute.
Yeah, and literally, folks, he's so mobbed by reporters, and he is not a spring chick, as they say, and he literally has been fighting to even get to his hotel room for about 30 minutes just to even be on with us. So we just got him as he got to his room, and he's getting his satchel. He wasn't quite ready. And we're going to get him to give us, because he's got the real. Some people claim they have Bilderberg sources. He's got them on the inside and on the outside. So this is a big scoop we're about to get. Jim, do you have your satchel?
Yes, now I'm ready.
Okay, sir. Give us the lowdown. Who's attending, what the agenda is, what your huge breaking news is. And, of course, the newspaper is American Free Press, AmericanFreePress.net. Go ahead.
Okay. One very interesting development, which is encouraging, is that some of the major Bilderberg people are saying that many, quote, important people, quote, are not attending this year. They always find out, and we get in trouble at home. Politicians who are embarrassed when constituents call and say, why are you dealing with these monsters and so forth? That's a fun thing. They're also celebrating the fact that your president, Obama, has signed off on the international treaty, which would allow the UN to come into your house and take your gun away, a European bureaucrat. It's some kind of treaty called the National Guns Treaty or something under the UN.
Yeah, it's a small arms ban treaty. So they're pushing that at this disgusting, treasonous event.
Absolutely. And the evil thing about this, he might pull a little George Bush and say it's not a treaty, it's just an agreement. But if it's a treaty, as you know, under our Constitution, the treaty is the superior law of the land. That's why George Washington said, don't have any treaties. Don't have enemies. Be neutral. Be friendly with all nations and partial to none.
Well, Jim, to expand on that, what about the euro? Do they want to plunge the euro to bring in the SDR, or are they there trying to prop up the euro?
Oh, they're determined to save the euro, and they're nervous about it, though, of course, with the economic crisis. But the euro is important because it's part of their world government program. They're very discouraged, thank goodness. They're very downbeat because they've fallen so far behind. As I said before, in the 1990s, Bilderberg was absolutely confident that we'd have an American Union patterned after the European Union, and the Asian Pacific Union would be well underway. And they've fallen back, they've fallen behind, and they're very discouraged, but they're still persisting on climate change, as futile as that might be. As you know, the real scientists have shown and demonstrated, we're talking about climatologists, experts in the field, who are...
They got caught in climate gate. They know it's a fraud. It's about taking over resources. So you're saying that's a big agenda. What about Bill Gates in attendance? We know he's always pushing eugenics and climate change. The Spanish newspapers are reporting that they caught up with him trying to basically sneak in, claiming he was in Barcelona for something else, and then he said he's there to push climate taxes.
Yes, he is. And he's attended one Bilderberg meeting in the past, and this is his second Bilderberg meeting. Definitely they're going to push the climate change, even though they're so far behind on that, with the scientists, you know, letters proving this whole thing is a fraud. In fact, one Bilderberg guy was said that on climate change, we're about whipped. That's quote on climate change.
We're about whipped. Incredible.
About whipped.
Incredible breaking news.
They are determined to push climate change. There's more. Let's see. I can't do notes here, but they're doing more propaganda on alleged climate change, even as we speak. And a consumer note,
Of course, British Petroleum is, and all the Shell and the other big international oil companies have long been Bilderberg luminaries, and they are competitors, but they're still a brotherhood. So they have agreed to allow Obama to be outraged and talk about criminal procedures against BP, but he's also referred to as one of our brothers among the oil industry, which has long been heavily represented.
So it's going to be a bunch of talk like the AIG charges they've now dropped and the Goldman Sachs, much ado about nothing, putting on a show. What about oil prices? What about the dollar? I mean, it sounds like from your past reportage, they're going from being in control and planning the future to just trying to maintain control.
They're trying to maintain control. Now, their plan is for the gas prices go down and be nice and cheap this summer. In the months ahead, they're going to go up to $4 a gallon, starting probably around November, some such time. They're saying that we have to do some pacification here. But then, that's why they still maintain production of oil at only 80%, not 100% of easy capacity. So, for every 100 barrels that could be produced today, only 80 barrels are being produced to generate a future shortage. There's no shortage at the moment.
Yeah, they're creating artificial scarcity. Jim, such precious time with you. What does this mean? I mean, how big is this that quite a few members, and do you have any intel on you know, basic numbers? I mean, what percentage? 10%? 20%? I mean, this is obviously a crisis if they can't get their luminaries there.
You want to roll down this of confirmed participants so far?
Well, I mean, any notables? We know who the regulars are, but is there any notable politician being groomed, like Mr. Cameron, who was groomed a few years ago?
Let's see. We know that Gessner was to be in South Korea for the G20 Friday and Saturday. He may show up on Sunday or Monday, but nevertheless, Larry Summers will be there, now an advisor to your president. Let's see, do you need more names?
No, that's fine. Let me shift gears again. What about Iran? Anything about Iran? Israel's got nuke subs. They're saying they may attack. You've had the attack on the flotilla. The Israel-Iran flotilla. Anything on that?
Yes, the on the flotilla thing. That would happen. They're a little skittish about that now, and Bilderberg is not 100% in favor of U.S. airstrikes on Iran, but many of them are. Wars generate money, no matter what the war, good guys, bad guys, or whatever. In all of our wars, we've had profiteering scandals on both sides.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
All right, my friends, he is still in Spain, about to leave. Bilderberg officially ended yesterday, but now we have a reporter on for American Free Press. He's also deputy editor who can recap what happened Friday evening, Saturday, and Sunday. It's in Bloomberg. It's all over U.S. news. It's all over foreign news. I have to say this is the biggest rout in Bilderberg history. Jim Tucker agreed when he was on Friday. He's already flying back to the U.S. He's going to be on for a full report later in the week, our final report on Bilderberg until next year. We also have the fact that Bill Gates was there. Other people were there. The news is reporting, Bloomberg is reporting that Bernanke didn't show up, but our intel is that he was there. I know Bernanke was there in 2006 and 2008, of course, chairman of the Federal Reserve. But the bad news is the majority of them, for the first time, are greenlighting an attack on Iran. That doesn't mean it's 100%, but it's all going in that direction. And, of course, Tucker in 2002 said the attack won't be in 02 when the media was saying it would be, including the Washington Post. He said Donald Graham, the publisher, was there. It's going to be March of 03. He said that over a year before. He was correct. And so the fact that Iran is green-lighted is very, very scary. To give us the latest developments and go over those points I just made is Mark Anderson of AmericanFreePress.net. Mark, thanks for coming on with us.
You're welcome, Alex. It's been a very interesting last 24 hours in particular. The route that you're talking about, I believe you mean how they were kind of smoked out of here in a way. The understanding from talking to the hotel repeatedly, badgering them for press conferences, badgering them for information, not letting up one bit, was that you couldn't get in there publicly in the Dolce Hotel till today at noon. Well, they were gone out of here yesterday evening. And the meeting was really supposed to last until this morning. Traditionally, according to my colleague Jim Tucker, they always have their Monday breakfast before they depart. I think they were the last man standing, the last Bilderberg out of here, was probably maybe 9 p.m. last night. And I talked to a lot of different
Was that Etienne d'Avignon?
I'm sorry?
Who was the last to leave?
Oh, I don't know specifically. I just know that it seems that all the publicity just kind of made them turn tail and run a little bit. Maybe not in a fleeing fashion. I'm not going to say they fled, but I think it just got a little too inhospitable for
them. Well, by route, their entire agenda's in trouble. They're now all over the newspapers worldwide. The Drudge Report every day. The Bloomberg's going, okay, there is a global government. Okay, this is suspicious. You know, where were you, Bernanke? Obama's their puppet. That's in the news. Tucker said that Bilderberg sources told him that one Bilderberg group member said, we're about whipped on climate change taxes, but their ace in the hole is starting World War III.
Well, what you said about Iran certainly rings pretty true. Just how close they are to that is very difficult to say. Bill Gates' appearance here brought about some confirmation that he was here under one guise, but his actual reason for being here was to try and sell Zapatero, the Spanish prime minister who gave the opening address, like most nationals do that host the meetings, try and sell him on the green tax, I think otherwise known as the carbon tax. And that could drastically drive up energy costs and lead to this impoverishment you were referring to.
Exactly, and we know Greece was the first to adopt the green jobs that take two jobs for every new job, and even the Spanish leaders have said that was the coup de grace that killed their economy.
Yeah, so it seems Bill Gates used a disingenuous excuse to get here just to generally counsel the PM on the economy, but it was specifically about that tax. Barcelona, June 5th, Saturday, 1,000 anti-Israeli marchers on the flotilla thing, but 200 anti-Bilderberg marchers joined them. 1,200 people in the center of Barcelona.
Absolutely amazing. What about Jim's intel? Because I know you went with him. Anything else that he said about the fact that one of the Bilderberg members said we're about whipped on the carbon tax?
Well, I don't know about that one. I would be less than honest if I could answer that one, if I tried to answer that definitively. All I know is Gates was here to discuss it. But where they went on that, I don't know. I think part of the situation where it seems they really had to rush through their business and kind of get out of here, you know, maybe they left some unfinished business or some loose ends. At any rate, you know, that some other miscellaneous came through. They spent just about a cool million on renting the place and for all their executive chefs every night and all sorts of about 600 to 800 thousand euro for just their security. Supposedly the Spanish taxpayers don't have to pick all that up. It's reimbursed. So that's just some miscellaneous matters. But everything's just kind of coming together plank by plank here. But the real story here in the brief time we have is that the media attention was so great that I think they really had to kind of abbreviate everything and get on out of here. They know they're not welcome. It's an inhospitable place, perhaps anywhere they'll go now. I think the bottom line is that the news doesn't remain a flash in the pan or doesn't be too sporadic, but becomes long-term sustained coverage of what they're doing. And that's a critical point for independent media and regular media.
Well, yeah, Paul Dornanu of Romania brought this up. He said that he's talked to Dutch and others that say they've been to the steering committees that only have 20, 30 members of Bilderberg. We know Bilderberg does have those steering committee hearings. Sometimes they have them at trilateral commission meetings. The good news is we now see people going to the trilateral meetings, the CFR meetings, all of the sub meetings.
Yes. That's right. And the former Spanish PM spoke to the Chicago Council on Global Affairs that I covered, and he said some things that kind of laid some hints for here. And that was back in April. And he's Jose Aznar. I don't remember his full name. But he had said some things about that they might have to back off on trying to dictate to all the European nations every last thread of their existence. I think they're sensing that that maybe they're going to have to soften their steps a little bit. But it's hard. You know, these people speak in code, you know, one level for public consumption, and then speak in another level for their own brethren. So it's really a kind of a translation job when these globalists start talking.
Well, I noticed that Saturday and Sunday I saw reports of more nations support sanctions or blockade on Iran. So we saw the drumbeat for war with Iran intensify after Bilderberg. Here's one out of the Canadian news, Globe and Mail. Canada wins key fight against bank tax. Canada has won a key fight in its high-profile international campaign against a global bank tax. So countries have to win fights just to have their sovereignty. So Canada's won a key fight in its high-profile international campaign against a global tax as G20 finance ministers Saturday approved a plan that allows countries to manage an issue as they see fit. Isn't it nice that the G20 will allow us to have our own affairs, Mr. Anderson?
Yeah, that's the thing among the Spanish citizenry here and among the shopkeepers. That's what they, above and beyond the secrecy of Bilderberg and what are they doing in our country and what's going on, they kind of sense this condescension. There they are at the Hotel Dolce up on the ivory tower hill looking down upon the city. You know, the metaphor is unmistakable, and they sense that there's this all kind of papering over of their sovereignty and to sort of override their local control. Even the local governor, I'm told by a pretty good source, Spain has like 8 provinces. One of them is Catalonia, where I'm at, and that governor or president of this province also was reportedly at Bilderberg. And so this is a local that should be fighting this breach of sovereignty who instead is going to the meeting.
Disgusting. We've only got about 2 minutes left with Mark Anderson of AmericanFreePress.net. Any other key intel that's come out of the meeting?
Well, a lot of things are still falling into place. As I say, they kind of turned tailed and ran. I think that we're pretty square on the Iran thing being a high priority. They keep trying to say that a country with not a single operational nuclear weapon is a nuclear threat, when other nations, Israel on up, have plenty.
Sweet Lucy was a dancer, but none of us were dancing because she was a